Welcome to episode 41 of the Serious About Security podcast for May 29th, 2013, brought to you by the Center for Education and Research in Information Assurance and Security, or Sirius at Purdue University. Of course, the person from Sirius is out today, so I'm just joined by Mike Hill today, and Mike will have the first article.
Thanks, Preston. The first article today is about Twitter's two-factor authentication, which they rolled out last week. The method they use for the two-factor is actually SMS messages. So you can go in and now register your mobile phone. It'll allow you to register one phone per account. And then when you try to log in, when you activate that, when you log into the site, it will then send you an SMS message with a 6-digit code, which you'll type in and will serve as your second factor. This appears to be a good first step for Twitter, but there were several articles that kind of came out about the same time kind of criticizing the approach, saying that maybe this is not enough at this point in time. One of the things that's kind of criticized is a lot of folks share accounts, such as the AP. You know, there's several journalists that share the AP Twitter feed, and implementing two-factor in that case would be very difficult and wouldn't really provide any additional value, since several people share that account and need to share that account. So one of the criticisms was, hey, you know, Twitter needs to figure out a way that these accounts can be shared and managed by multiple people. I did go through myself on my own Twitter account and went ahead and activated the two-factor. I thought it was interesting because, you know, I put in my mobile phone number and then it said text go to 40404 and this will finish the activation. And I'm like, okay, you know, I text that message and it says, oh, you've got Twitter text messaging set up now. And it says, you know, you can text help to get a list of help commands. And there's all these additional things you can do through Twitter text messaging, which I assume they had in place beforehand. But then there's a setting in your account where you can go and you can say, I want to use this as a second form of authentication. The thing is, though, there's also right there on that initial screen, it says, and if at any point you want to stop the text messaging, just type stop to this number and it will, you know, remove the text messaging off your account, which, as some articles have pointed out, that's one way to turn off the two-factor authentication for users that have put it in place. So if someone knows your mobile phone number, they can spoof it and they know you're using two-factor, they could actually type stop as if it's coming from your phone number, and it would turn off the two-factor, and then it would just fall back to username and password. So I thought this was a good one to discuss. We mentioned a few podcasts back how Twitter was beginning to look into two-factor. I haven't seen anything yet that implies they're going to do more beyond this, but this is what they've got available today. So what do you think, Preston? You think this is a good step?
Well, as you said, it's probably a decent first start. I mean, it is a two-factor authentication method in that you need to have your phone with you. But a lot of the news that has come out about Twitter account hijacking has generally been with shared accounts. I mean, important accounts like the AP and things like that. And you know, this isn't going to help them at all. I mean, I'm sure they have multiple people who share an account, and they would not be able to use this two-factor authentication system at all. So, because you can only associate one phone number to it. So this doesn't help with that. I would like to see Twitter have a method to make it so you can give users the ability to essentially assign write privilege or something to your account so that you could move away from this whole shared account approach. And then this method would be useful because each user could have their own phone number associated with their account, and then they would have their own, you know, method of two-factor authentication or something like that. But this is a first step, and you know, Twitter is probably going to make changes to it in the future, and maybe support additional authentication methods like Google Authenticator or something like that. I have no idea if they plan on doing that, but this is, they already had their text messaging service. You could use it to, you know, post to your Twitter feed and things like that before. And this, I think they decided to make this kind of an extension onto that. So I don't know if that's a good approach or not. I guess we'll see when people use it, but I think it's at least, I think it's better than nothing. I mean, it would help me secure my account, it would help you secure your account, it would help anybody who has their own personal Twitter account to secure their account, but it won't help with a lot of the news we've been seeing about Twitter account hijacking.
Yeah, I agree. I think it will help a certain amount of individuals, you know, and I know there's some folks that, you know, only post for their own account, and they have a lot of followers, you know, probably guys like maybe LeBron James or something, you know. If they're assuming they are tweeting themselves, you know, they could then put this in place and kind of secure that. But like you said, a lot of these articles we've discussed, there's really, you know, this won't prevent that. And that's, you know, I think if they don't come up with something else in the future, we're going to continue to see things like the AP hack. And then I think they're going to come under more criticism because it's going to say, well, two-factor didn't stop this. And really, they don't have a solution that fits probably the most vulnerable of the accounts at this point in time. I do agree. I think it's a good first step. I think it's a necessary step. And I think it was probably done as an extension to the text messaging. I think they looked at what features they had, and they said, where can we fit this in? And it probably was a good fit for them, an easy one to roll out quickly. I just hope that they're going to continue to evolve their security. You know, I would like to see them tie in the Google Authenticator so that there's other methods for performing this two-factor and maybe kind of split it off a little bit from the SMS. But I guess we'll see. You know, if this takes care of most of their problems, they'll probably leave it as it is. If they continue to have these major exploits and these hacks where, you know, these big Twitter accounts, you know, keep getting hacked and embarrassing information's posted, they'll probably want to continue to evolve a different solution.
Well, my other concern about this system is the, I don't know, potential ease it is to turn it off. You mentioned that you can text stop to a number to stop essentially text messaging, and from reading the articles, that includes this SMS two-factor authentication. And I honestly don't know the spoofability of cell phones and numbers when you're text messaging, but that is a concern to me as well, in that how easy is it to turn off? You don't need your password to turn off your two-factor authentication. You only need to text stop to, I guess, 40404 in order to stop the text messaging. So that could potentially be a vector for hijacking, making the account hijacking probably not that much more difficult, assuming you knew the cell phone number of the person you were targeting.
Yeah, and that's one. I don't know if they plan on putting a stop to that. Obviously, they have to write more software. Like I said, I think that's because they built it on as the extension to the text messaging. So I believe that all just works like a typical text messaging service where you can text help and you get a list of help commands. And, you know, if you want to unsubscribe basically from text messaging, you can say stop. That made perfect sense when it was just all text messaging. But now they're using it also as a form of two-factor, and that's where there's that disconnect and there's that bit of vulnerability. So I don't know, you know, after the slew of these articles, if they're going to go back and look at it. It seems like they could put a hook in their software that says, wait, you know, if this is being used as two-factor, when they type stop, we basically disable all the messages we've sent them except for two-factor, and we text them back and say, you need to go log in to disable your two-factor. You have to go through this process. We're not going to allow this to circumvent, because that's essentially what you're doing is, I mean, I don't know how likely it is, but you know, if you were targeting someone You know, and, you know, they left their cell phone on their desk and you just picked it up, you type stop, erase the message off their phone kind of thing, and then later you go and you can get into their account because you know their password. You've bypassed it easily, but I guess if you have access to their cell phone like that, you probably could do a lot of other things anyway, so maybe that's not the best example, but it seems like when you turn, you should have to put in your password and that code to disable the two-factor as well. I mean, you have to go through a series of steps to enable it. You should have to go through the same steps to disable it. And just typing stop is really only one factor at that point, and that shouldn't be enough to change your account.
Yeah, well, I'll move on to the next article, and that is a confidential report lists U.S. weapon system designs that were compromised by Chinese cyber spies. So basically, I think the Department of Defense released a report that was had a lot of redacted stuff in it, but I think some news organizations got the classified version of the report, and it talked about several weapon systems that were essentially the designs were compromised by Chinese hackers. More than two dozen major weapon systems whose design were breached were programs critical to U.S. missile defense and combat aircraft and ships, according to a previously undisclosed section of a confidential report. So, I mean, we've talked about Chinese espionage before, and when we were talking about the Verizon report on a previous podcast. But this is, I mean, this happened over years, I believe. This isn't something they just suddenly accessed. Two dozen major weapon systems. I think one of them was back in 2007. So this is over a significant period of time. But this report made light of this to essentially the public and news organizations as a whole. And I mean, this is pretty significant. This essentially saves China. I'm assuming that they use these billions and possibly even trillions of dollars of research and development costs in developing their own weapons. It speeds up their weapon design systems a lot, and it does, I mean, it gives them essentially an upper hand in even combating our own systems, because they kind of can know the internal workings and things like that. But one thing that it wasn't talked about in the report is exactly how they got in and who they targeted to get in. And I don't think we'll ever really know the full truth about that. But my questions related to this report are, who were they targeting and why were they able to get these? I think in the article, it mentions that they targeted subcontractors a lot, and the Defense Department was very kind of concerned about the amount of hacking that subcontractors experienced and succeeded, and they didn't even know it was happening. They basically didn't know until the FBI knocked on their door and said, "Hey, you've been hacked," and that was how they found out that they've been hacked. And I find it odd that these major designs for weapon systems are, I would say, put behind somewhat lax security. I mean, it seems to me, and I could be wrong, that somebody having a clearance, a DOD clearance for secret or top secret information, essentially has been deemed as sufficient enough security to give them essentially the entire design spec or whatever. I mean, companies and private organizations seem to do a lot better job of protecting their secrets. You know, if you have a part that needs made for this large design, and this contractor is making that part, you give them the spec for the part. You don't give them the entire design spec for the whole device. You give them the design spec for the part you need and not the entire design. And I don't know if that's what's happening, but it seems to me like, this it could be. I mean, it's not necessarily a single company that makes an entire missile or an entire aircraft. You know, they may make a piece and send it off to another company that assembles it and things like that. And they should have what they need to have in order to make the thing, but they shouldn't have any more. And I'm really not sure if that's what's happening in this case.
Yeah, well, like you said, Preston, those details weren't shared in the article, and I doubt they ever will be, you know, as far as how this information was obtained. I don't know. What seems clear to me from the article is, you know, this is, you know, very targeted. I think they knew what they were going after, and I think they this was the type of information they were wanting to compromise. I am a bit surprised because, you know, there's a whole need-to-know hierarchy, or at least there's supposed to be within the government. So you would think that, you know, that type of information would be a very high classification level and off the grid. But that may not be the case. You know, we don't know, like I said, we don't know exactly how they acquired this. And it has been taking place over years. I also saw, you know, that, you know, one of those goes back to 2007. But I would say probably over the last 10 years, you know, these types of things have probably been occurring, if not longer. And, you know, it's just, it's kind of mind-boggling to me that they're getting this much information. And I could see where this would definitely create tensions between the governments, because it's, you know, it definitely gives them an advantage. You know, they know our systems. It saves them the time to develop their own systems. And, you know, it really speeds things along for them at our cost, at the cost of all the time and effort we've put into these designs over the years. We clearly need to do a better job of protecting this information. You know, one thing I hope this article will do is kind of be the wake-up call for our own government, in that we've got to close these gaps the best we can. I like I said, we don't know the details, and we probably never will, but it seems like this information should be very difficult to acquire. And even if it is acquired, there should be kind of a chain of custody that says, you know, this information is moving between these sources. And I don't know. I just don't know how that can happen. I don't know if it's the contractors, but you would think they'd have to meet a certain clearance level as well. So I'm just stunned by the whole article, that this much information, you know, just could be leaked or could be obtained by them.
Well, I guess the Defense Department will probably be upping their security, I'm guessing, of themselves and subcontractors or whoever was involved in this. But I think some of this probably goes back to the RSA breach of the, you know, there was an RSA breach quite a while ago when they were able to essentially be able to clone those security tokens at one point. And I'm guessing that was one of the ways. In fact, I think a few defense contractors were breached after that security thing. And I seem to recall them saying, oh, nothing major was stolen, but maybe they didn't realize it, or maybe they weren't telling the truth, or maybe there were some other defense contractors breached that we didn't even hear about, or something like that. But I think there's some other things we've heard in the past that happened that probably are probably contributed to some of the breaches that were involved here.
Yeah, I imagine that there's going to be some kind of response to this, that that they're going to tighten down these systems that were compromised. I would assume they'll probably keep a lot of this hush-hush, you know, and not share those details with us. But I would imagine behind the scenes that there's a lot of activity taking place to determine how these how this information was compromised and to make sure it doesn't become compromised again. And like I said, you know, I think it fits well within the need to know, and I don't know if this was a case of, projects, you know, creep scope, you know, or scope creep, where over time more and more individuals gained access to this information that maybe needed to actually know these details. You know, I don't know if this was all piecemealed from the Chinese hackers, if they were just able to take pieces over time and put the whole puzzle together, or if they just hit the lottery and it's like in just this one place, you know, there was the full design specs and they're able just to grab that. But like I said, I think there needs to be an approach where those kinds of things can't just be acquired over the network, you know, over the internet. That's not good at all.
Right, and the other question you have is, okay, when you're done, you know, a subcontractor is done with this information, is it scrubbed from the appropriate machines and not accessible anymore? And you have to wonder if that happened as well. So we don't know that either. We really don't know much at all from this article. We just know it happened, and we know China was involved, and China's saying it wasn't the government. It was, you know, it was private espionage. Of course, I don't think we believe that, but that's what they say. So we don't know a whole lot. So anyway, if we don't have anything else to, do we have anything else to say about that, or is that it?
Nope, I'm good.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mike Hill. I'm Preston Wiley. I think Keith Watson should be back next week. Until next time, have a safe and secure day.